Welcome to the Legends Lounge. I'm Trill Withers, and with me today in the lounge, we have former St. Mary's Knight and Arizona Wildcat. He was an NBA champion with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He is now co-host on the Road Tripping Pod. He is very dapperly dressed. We've got Channing Frye.
Yes.
First things first, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Doing great, man. Just got done with another day of work over here at NBA TV, Turner Studios. That's why I'm wearing a suit and tie.
I forgot a title, so I apologize. Did I forget anything else?
No. So Mondays, I do Crunch Time with Jared Greenberg. That's on the NBA app. That's really fun. It's like the NFL Red Zone, but for basketball. So that's fun. And then we record a show, and myself and Kristen Ledlow do our show Handles. And then after that, we do a 30-minute pregame show called Game Time before the big TNT show. So, yeah, we're here. We're doing it.
Did you see yourself working harder after retirement?
It's different. You know, I think anything that I was going to do, I was going to work really hard. Right. And so, you know, I've done things kind of less. But for me, it's about being efficient in the time that you're taking away from your family and yourself. So for me, that's what I wanted to make it as important and as constructive and as amazing as possible.
Definitely. Now, before we get into it, I do have to ask, do you know what your nickname is on Basketball Reference?
Yeah, the Buffet of Goodness.
The Buffet. Did you put that there? Is that how you know?
What was crazy is I think it was either in Portland or Phoenix. You know, you're asked 1,000 questions all the time by the media. And they were like, Channing, you gotta have a nickname. And I was like, yeah, I'm called the Buffet of Goodness because I do a little bit of everything pretty good, right?
There you go.
And I said that joking around, and they were laughing, and I'm thinking no big deal about it. And then they put it on the thing, on the pamphlet, and it just took off from there. And people were laughing. So, yeah, now I'm probably the Buffet of Goodness.
I guess, like, a lot of people have, like, 10, 12 nicknames. You have one, but it's just, like, you're just Buffet of Goodness now. Yeah, you only need one.
I mean, I hope that I'm a Las Vegas buffet of any buffet.
There you go.
King Crab, sure.
Yeah, luxury buffet. Exactly. If that.
Decadence.
Like to ask all the legends, tell me about your welcome to the NBA moment.
Dude, I mean, I had a bunch, man. I remember playing Dirk Nowitzki and him absolutely torching me. I was just like, I've never guarded anybody like this in my life.
Right.
And then Shaq, who I had an opportunity to work with here at Turner. It's just like I was 235 pounds and I'm a rookie. How am I guarding that? Those two guys, definitely. And then obviously I got to throw a Kobe in there. He gave after the 81, I think we were next, and he gave us 61 or 62. And I remember after the game, we were like, well, it's not 81. So, you know,
y'all got off light in terms of history.
That's what we thought. But it's crazy now for somebody to score 61 points, but 81, then 61. So, like, just the thing, that's how good he was. It was like, well, hey, it wasn't 81, you know?
Right. So, that, like, Garden, like Dirk and Shaq, all that was your rookie year?
Rookie year, Dirk, Shaq. This is 05. So, 05 championship Shaq. This is prime Dirk. Prime Chris Bosh.
Right before championship
prime
Amari, Dirk.
Yeah. Right. Prime Yao. Prime Pau Gasol. Prime, gosh, who else was just nasty? Like Alonzo Mourning.
Garnett.
Like you had real, Garnett. Yeah, forgot about him. You had real beasts that you had to guard every single night. Like Duncan, think about it. You had to go Duncan, Yao, then for New Orleans, you had like David West,
Tyson Chandler,
and then you had in Minnesota for a couple of years was Kevin Garnett. Then you had in Memphis, then you had like Pau Gasol and whoever. Like each night, you had to be ready to play, or you were going to get barbecued.
Right. So no nights off, and this was you were three or four-year player, Arizona, correct?
Yeah, four-year player. So I'm 22, but mind you, I'm 6'10 and a half, 6'11 at that size, but I'm 235. So I'm used to guarding centers that aren't mobile, not Shaq and Amari And people forget how good Chris Kamen and Elton Brand were. Like, there were just studs all the way down the line. Rasheed Wallace, those two. I mean, it was crazy. Ben Wallace.
So when did you first feel like you belonged, right? Like, did you ever, was it a night where you held your own or got the best of one of those guys? When did you feel like you belonged?
I did really well against the Pistons. I had so much respect for them. Even to this day, I feel like they're not talked about enough as like how good that team was. With Tayshaun, Chauncey, Rip, Rasheed,
Ben Wallace, Carlos Williamson.
Yeah, like it was just like, dang, like they are no holes in their game. And then for me, being able to compete against them, I felt like I belonged, but I never felt like who I was going to be for the future because I was too small stature-wise and wasn't the fastest or the biggest. I mean, I was too small and wasn't the biggest to be guarding these gigantic centers.
Right.
I wasn't as fast as a four. So how do you know, I eventually evolved, took some lumps in Portland, didn't really play, and then finally got an opportunity in Phoenix to become who I was for the rest of my career.
Now, you mentioned starting in New York. You came into a hectic Knicks. I feel like there were a lot of hectic Knicks teams.
Yeah, we were the most hectic.
What do you remember all these years later? What do you remember just about that year in general? Because it was Coach Larry Brown, right? His first year as well, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So what do you remember about that year?
So I remember three things. One, I remember to this day, I still have really good relationships with all those guys that were on that team. It wasn't that these guys were bad guys, right? Like, right. I could reach out and talk to, you know, Marbury whenever. I work now with Jamal Crawford. Reached out to Nate. I got, you know, whatever. Quentin Richardson is awesome. Malik Rose is awesome. Like, Jalen Rose, I had an opportunity to play with him. Steve Francis. So, like, all these guys really were good guys. We just weren't good guys for each other, you know? There were too many moving pieces on that team for it to be good, right? Like, nobody knew who was going to start. Nobody knew what type of team we were going to be. Everyone was just miserable because it's like, you know, go through this door and the door is locked and all you have is your fist. So you're just punching at a door
over and over.
And eventually you're just not going to punch hard because it's pointless. And that's what happened to our team. We just like didn't feel like we had a chance to win, no matter even if we played right.
So with the talent, like the guys you named, talent for sure, how does that not come together? Like in any way?
So I think, you know, we had the highest payroll in the NBA and a lot of guys had a lot of expectations. So what Zeke did because he was our GM, was he brought guys in from winning teams, right? Quentin Richardson, Malik Rose, he brought, and then drafted three young guys, right? So myself, David Lee, and Nate Robinson. So you have a vet team that needs to win now, but then you have three first round picks
right at
the same time that need to be integrated to that. And so for me, you pay Jerome James, you pay Eddie Curry, but you're asking both of them to like figure out how to work together. And it was no time to do that. And I think New York, the best way to be good in New York is to pick one leader, one pack leader, and then allow everyone else to fiddle down. And I think they've done a little bit of that, getting Brunson and allowing RJ and Julius to just be who they are. But yeah, we didn't have that. We didn't have that.
Who picks that? Do you think like is that an organization thing? Is that
that's an organization? You gotta pick the top of the mountain, and hey, we're gonna ride on him, and he's gonna be the one that leads us. I think if you don't establish that, you're causing a lot of chaos in your locker room, and you got uber competitive guys that are like, yo, if they haven't crowned the king, I'm going for it. It will be Game of Thrones. Bad teams have House of Dragons situations where. I think I'm the king. You think you're the king. She the queen. It's crazy.
So if the organization doesn't step in and, you know, this is the hierarchy.
Yeah, for sure.
It leaves you to fend for yourself, really.
You pick the one guy that has respect, works hard, is a beacon of what the culture of the team should be. If they are who they're supposed to be, talent, work ethic, you know, respect from their players, you're going to do well. Look at Boston, like with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like, they've had to figure it out. They're two different players. They both deserve teams, but Jason said, I'm the guy that can be the MVP. So I'm the leader of the pack, and I'll take that responsibility.
Does that, or have you ever seen it, like, guys get their toes stepped on? Like, if it is a situation where everybody is going for that or thinks they're a top dog.
I saw a lot of toes get stepped on. We had so much talent. It was bananas. Right. We had Vucevic, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Alfred Payton. We had, I'm missing someone else, like Tobias Harris, right? We had all these guys that were young, and they never picked a guy that they were like, this is our guy, right? Like, right. This is the guy, Mario Hezonja. We had a lot of hype back then. But like, they never said, we're going to make this team all about Vooch, or we're going to ride, or, you know, we're going to, you know, put our luggage on Victor. And they just allowed everyone to kind of, you know, rats in a bucket eating on each other. You know, it sucks.
Right.
So even been good.
Yeah. I mean, the guys you listed now are like guys contributing to playoff teams.
They're like also
currently. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Victor obviously had his injuries, but at one point people were like, he's the second best two guard in the league. You know, Vooch is
all-star. Yep.
He's right. He's one of the, you know, most skilled players in the NBA. Tobias is a $300 million player. Evan Fournier's made a solid chance for himself. Aaron Gordon's been on some quality teams. So for me, it's just like, you're telling me that can't work, and it only doesn't work because you're just like assessing talent, but you can't do that when you have five guys who are all-star caliber players.
Right. So I guess, you know, in watching the game now as you do, do you see that out there on the horizon? Like, we have a lot of teams going out there. Do you, like, maybe not necessarily trying to win the most games right now, playing for draft position?
I don't think you see that right now because sorry to interrupt you.
No,
I don't think you see that as much right now. I think you'll see teams are going to be tanking, submarining, digging holes from America to China after closer to the All-Star break after the new year. I think right now these teams that are sort of there, sort of winning, Wizards, Utah maybe. I mean, I'm even – what about Minnesota, Indiana? Yeah. These teams that have assets, Oklahoma City, they're just playing free because the better that these guys play, the more somebody's going to say – think about if Lauri Markkanen and Kelly Olynyk went to Dallas, right? Think about that. We were talking about that. Think about if Miles Turner – ends up going to Phoenix, right? With a three-way trade, or, you know, DeAndre Ayton goes to the Lakers or whatever that is. Think about those type of trades. So don't look at the middle of the pack and go, dang, who really has a chance to be really good? Who's going to snatch a guy from somewhere to go for it, and who's going to just blow it up?
Right. I guess at what point inside that locker room, because you played on a Phoenix team that I feel like from the outside looking in,
they blow the crap out of that team up.
Well, yeah, everybody was like, well, yeah, no, they're this is a lot of, yeah, this is players other teams didn't want. They're not going to win a lot of games. And they want 48, 49, yeah, 48.
We didn't make the playoffs, we won 48. So the reason that worked is because we had great chemistry and we had leaders. So Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic were our guys, right? Those are our guys. And then Miles Plumlee, myself, and the Morris twins, and PJ Tucker and Gerald Green were just going to get in where we fit in. We knew each other's plays. And we were like, listen, as pros, if you're on a team that's blowing it up and the coach is allowing you to just play, right, and it's not just like showcase this one guy, Jeff Hornacek did a great job with us that year. He was like, guys, if we're not winning, you're going to go to winning teams if we're playing good.
Right.
If we're playing really bad, we're going to have to send you in a package to a really bad team.
Right.
So everyone was like, no, we don't want that. So it's a win-win. It's a win-win for everybody.
I guess at what point in that locker room do you start to see, because like you mentioned, you know, Utah's off to a hot start now. Do you say like, are we too good to tank? Are we too good to?
No, I would say Utah is one injury away from saying, okay, that was good enough. Like, thank you for your time.
Right, like that was fun.
Or for sure. Or some team goes, I will give you above and beyond for, like, you just say, hey, Lauri Markkanen, I want two first-round picks this year, next year. hey, Kelly Olynyk, Lauri Markkanen. I want three first round picks.
Right, Jordan Clarkson playing well. Like,
think about Mike Conley Jr. on the Lakers, right? In a three-way trade. Think about Mike Conley or Jordan Clarkson on any of these teams. Think about Jordan Clarkson on Phoenix, right? Think about
Malik Beasley.
These teams that are like, we got a chance. We're going for it, and we want to win right now. Right. That's what you're doing. Look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I know people in Oklahoma don't want to see it, but Lord have mercy. What are you doing? Like, give him a team. Put him on a team.
At what point, if you are, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I feel like we've heard the murmurs, never from him, to be fair, but is he going to want out at a certain point? Because it seems like he's been allowed to develop his game, but like you said, at what point do you want to, you know, start winning some ball games?
I think for him, he's embracing his opportunity, and I think he's doing an absolute – he's one of my favorite guys to watch. It's just like, how do you get to the lane that much? The only guy I remember in my years that could get to a lane like that was Tony Parker. Tony Parker would lead the league in points in the paint. Yep. We're like, how are you in here again?
All right, 6'2", 6'1".
Yeah, when we know you're going there. I think some teams – just off the rip, that would be amazing for him, right? As a 1-2 punch, I think if the Nets blow it up, or I like him in Orlando, right? If something can happen as a leader who can consistently get them 30 points, you put him with another young team, him with Paolo, maybe Jonathan Isaac, or whatever you have to get up. I like that just because of length. I don't know what Charlotte's doing.
Teams that are, I guess, are ready to take that next step, right? You don't want to trade for him and have him in a similar position.
Like we have our young guys. He's going to help you win 30 plus games. If you got somebody in the rest of your team that can win you 15, that's 45 games.
Right.
That's just my thinking behind it. Now, that may be a little bit much, but he's having one of those years and he's young.
Yeah. Now, we've, you know, talked some tanking, and with it, everybody's tanking now for Victor Wembanyama. Have you seen, heard, you familiar?
I wouldn't have won a game. I wouldn't have won a game.
He's the
greatest prospect in the history of basketball for the NBA. It's not even close. There has never been a creative player by God, whatever God you believe in or none at all, that has come from the heavens, that has made a player that, number one, his teammates love and appreciate. When he falls on the ground, they run and go get him. He's a good kid. He's personable. He's not injury prone at that size. And he is an absolute dog on a defensive end. If you watch this 18-year-old boy play defense, he's not a big, you know, a
plotting guy. Yeah.
He gets in a defensive stance. He's blocking three-pointers. He's sliding his feet, moving his body. He has a defensive presence about him. His timing is almost perfect. And his confidence, I know they show clips of like him shooting a lot of jumpers, but obviously he's going to be skinny. He's 18. Who's not skinny when they're 18? Right. It's bananas. And for me, and then let's look at the money-wise. I think Woj talked about it yesterday. The minute he comes to your team, your valuation is an extra $500 million.
Minimum. Yeah, it feels minimum.
Look what Zion does for the ticket price in New Orleans when he plays. Yeah. Right? It's been, look at what Paolo is starting to do in Orlando.
Ja Morant, like you get that type of high pick, what they can do for a city, for an organization.
And there's other guys in this draft that I think are going to be amazing that I've watched. I think the Thompson twins, I think that's their last name. Mm-hmm. Two little 6'7", 6'9" guys.
Overtime elite.
Yep, I think they are going to make an impact on a really good team. I think Scoot is going to be awesome. I love the way he attacks the rim. I could see him playing with another bigger guard that's a little more defensive, and you allow him to go downhill because most big men can space the floor now. I mean, there's so many other guys that are really well prepared to make your team really good. This is that draft. This is that, what was it, the 03 draft?
Where you think it's like just a number of franchise changers.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So you said you wouldn't win a game. I feel like that was executive Channing talking. But if you're player Channing, what are the players saying? Like, they see this kid too, right?
Oh, they know it.
Yeah, listen, they know this kid. So what's a player's mindset there?
Seeing this guy coming. It depends on where you're at. Right. If I'm young, and if I'm a forward or if I'm a center, imagine that 1-2 punch right there. Right. Imagine you're like, I don't know. Oh, let me just say, look how well Bobo is doing with Wendell Carter Jr. Now take Bobo and give him 1,000% more talent. Now that's, and Bobo's talented.
Yeah, having a great year.
And he's not injury prone. Look at that 1-2 punch. How do you guard that? How do you defend that? Look at what Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are doing. If I'm that, I want to be a part of that future. Right. So I go, hey, to my agent, my GM, if we get here, if we tank, I'm going to give this opportunity the best I can to be here if he's not here or to be here when he gets here.
Right.
If I know he's here. If not, I'm going to go to a good team and I'm still getting NBA checks.
Right. I mean, could that be, we were talking some Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like, hey, y'all been running this, you know, a couple of years. Get me Victor.
Man, listen, I mean, they're trying.
Yeah, like.
Right? They are trying. Look, that 1-2 punch, I think, is amazing. You look at Josh Giddey, who's now in today's game, you look at guys, you want to have 4 or 5 guys that are multidimensional to win games, who can shoot, pass, rebound, dribble, create off the cut. The way they were cutting last night, the way they played against Boston is exactly what I want to see if I'm Sam Presti, right? They just got beat because they're out-talented. Right. That's just it. You got beat by a guy who's going to win MVP. And so, okay.
Like good team that went to the finals last year. But you put up a good fight. Yeah, they play hard. They defend.
For sure. And you're establishing culture. Now, if you get Victor, wait to see how many vets want to come play with young fella.
Okay, you think he had like that kind of impact? It won't even be like he's 18 or he's, you know, domestic. Like, because a lot of them, we see these guys AAU, college, whatever. We see him growing up. So him being international, he's that special.
He is the greatest prospect in the history of the NBA. Who do you guard with him? Who do you put on him?
I would say Giannis, and even then,
have you seen him next to Gobert?
It's scary.
And
as he fills out,
And Gobert is 2 to 3 inches taller than Giannis. So nobody's guarding Giannis. But at the end of the day, if you're Atlanta, and look what Atlanta did to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. So you have physical 4 and 3 men, and then you allow him to come over the top. Why do you think Anthony Davis doesn't like playing the center position? He likes being the off block. Right. So I would do that whenever I play with Amari or Miles Plumlee, the athlete. I would want to guard the best guy on the block so that I could just stand still and somebody comes from the weak side and gets the block. Imagine you have somebody 7'4" coming to block
us with an 8-foot wingspan. Yeah.
What? And can handle? That's a mismatch. You got to double team him. But
it doesn't make sense.
Yow? Like, Sean Bradley, what are you doing?
Yeah. That is interesting because we on the outside see this kid coming, but I was curious at what the players would think once you see him, it's hard not to discuss him.
Really, if you get an opportunity, don't look at his fancy stuff. Don't look at his fancy stuff. Look at his approach to the game. If he misses a couple shots, does he go get a closer shot? How does he affect the people with the people like not around him? Does he rebound around his area? Does he run the floor if he hasn't got shots? He does all those things naturally. Right. He's not lazy. He runs the floor when somebody else has the ball. He gives the ball up early. It's not about him all the time. He's playing good basketball.
You mentioned, you said you would have preferred to play that closer to the basket position. Is that just like a personal thing, or would that have varied, who you were playing with? Like in Phoenix, would you have preferred to play one way versus Cleveland versus New York?
So what I learned very quickly is me posting up, there are players that do, and let me rewind this. I had an opportunity to play with James Jones in before we played in Cleveland, in Portland.
Okay.
And I was really trying to figure out who I was because Nate McMillan wanted me to be a post-up guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, but LaMarcus was way better. So I was like, I can't beat him at his game or Joe Prisbilla or some of the other guys. So I started working on three-point shooting. And that's why I was like, oh, y'all don't like it out here. But Brandon Roy loved it. Steve Blake loved it. Martell Webster loved it. Rudy Fernandez loved it. Right. Because when I was guarded by fives, that spacing is awkward for them. And they were just getting layups. Because they were getting layups over two and three men. So I started to work on that, but that wasn't the scheme for Nate in Portland. And that's why I went to Phoenix, and Amari was down there. So I would guard the five men for him, right? Or whoever was more the post guy. And then on the other end, I would give him and Steve the space that they needed to attack the rim and play that 1-2 game with them, that screen and roll. And the big man would always want to help. And I'm 7 foot. So by the time this two guard to my right closes out on me,
you're just seeing over the top of him.
Yeah, I don't even see him most of the time.
Right.
And so that is where it started. And then we did a version of that in Cleveland, and we were barbecuing teams in the playoffs.
I was gonna say, you have played for like some just interesting individual teams. Does one stick out more than the other? Thinking back.
Yeah, that 48-win team, I would say, sticks out the most. And then secondly was the 41 team in Portland, where we went to the playoffs but lost to Houston. I mean, people talk about Brandon Roy, but to see him on a daily was crazy. Like, never in a rush, could explode and dunk on you. You know, shooting twos, shooting threes, never afraid of the moment. Like, it, you know,
pass it was the ball.
I mean, everything at a high, high level.
Now, you mentioned the Phoenix team. You're from Phoenix area.
Yeah.
What was that like playing for that? Because I've heard, I feel like mixed reviews of people saying playing for the home team. You liked it?
Loved it. Loved
Why was that?
Well, number one, I was just appreciative of the opportunity. And the first year we went there, we went to the Western Conference Finals, playing with some of my idols. On that team, I was playing with like Steve Nash, Jason Richardson, Grant Hill, Amari, Robin Lopez, you know, still cool with them today. And then in one iteration of Phoenix, I was on a team with like Hedo Turkoglu, Vince Carter, Aaron Brooks. That team wasn't as good, but I'm still like, dang, dog, I had like Vince Carter's Puma poster on my thing, along with Grant Hill and Steve Nash and like, really figuring myself out there, and just the love and the sense of community was something that I appreciated.
Now, as a Phoenix native, I don't know if you were a Suns fan, but just seeing the Robert Sarver situation, like seeing it play out live as a fan and as a player, and now I guess back on the, I don't want to say outside, I feel like you're still Suns family.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I guess what was your take just seeing that play out?
So I think for me, I personally did not see any of the racist stuff. I thought there were certain times where there was conduct that probably wasn't becoming of a owner, right? That the stuff that just stays in the locker room. But for me, it was always like, what was important was winning for my city. I want what's best for the Suns. As a Suns fan, as a Phoenician, it baffles my mind that the Phoenix Suns cannot get a big name free agent when that's the fifth best city in America.
Right.
Like, what are we talking about? It was top five, top three, or top six winning his teams before all this riffraff happened the last 8 or 9 years. Let's put people in there in a place of power that are going to create a culture that is not only representative of the guys playing, but representative of the city and representative of the NBA. So that's what I'll say about that. But it just baffles me. Like, who doesn't want to go to Arizona and be in 80 degrees?
Yeah, what makes it a top five or such a great NBA food, city?
Culture, people, weather. When you're good on that team, they come out in droves. In the history of Phoenix, people think Phoenix has been good for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Like, other than that stint, Phoenix was very good on and off for a long time, right?
Like decades,
decades, right? And then it just got weird with different GMs and different coaches, and you just got away from the culture of it, right? You wanted to invite people in that wanted to bring some other culture there when you needed to say, what has it worked for Phoenix? And we're going to continue to do this, just add the right players, add the right talent. You know, don't reinvent the wheel. And right now, look at what Monty Williams did.
Right.
Came in there.
Had a great thing going. Yeah.
And established culture and was like, hey, we're going to play like this. We're going to be scrappy. We're going to play the way we need to play and go win some games.
Now, they are still looking for an owner. Did you and Richard Jefferson want to throw your name in the ring?
Listen, the way my bank account is set up, I definitely can't. But as a liaison, as an opportunity to be in there and give my two cents, I'd love that opportunity. I know Richard would too. You know, as guys that grew up in Arizona, watched the Suns, you know, was buying Kevin Johnson Hexalite Converse shoes, right? Like, I mean, everyone knows those bad boys.
Right.
I mean, for me, it would mean a lot because I don't want anything in return. Maybe some gear, some free gear, and maybe like a free beer.
At least they could do.
Right, a little free gear. But for me, it's just about I want the kids to have a team they can look up to that has a chance to win and that will inspire them to play basketball like the Suns inspired me. Hmm.
Now, I won't keep too much of your time, but we were talking some before, air. Can you tell me more about this wine business you got going on? Oh. Chosen Fam Wine?
Yeah, Chosen Family Wine. So for me, when I told the NBA and the league I was retiring, you know, my wife was like, you're a busybody. What are you going to do? And she's just like, you know, yeah, TV, but like, what are you going to do for you? That's not basketball. This is like your opportunity to do something. And so, you know, the long story short of it was that, like, I love going to dinners, talking, meeting new people, like connecting with people. I'm a very empathetic person. I like being around big, you know, nice groups, listening, right, talking, getting different opinions. And when I was doing these things, the thing that was the one thing that was in the middle of all of it was a bottle of wine. And I'm not saying that people were doing it to get drunk. I'm saying when you put a bottle of wine in the middle of a table, there are three things people ask. Why'd you bring it? Where is it from? And where'd you, like, have you ever been there? And most of the time you have a very, most of the time you that are like, oh, I just like the label, or you have a story. I went there with my wife. We knew the winemaker. It was beautiful.
There's something to it. Yeah.
There's always something to it. But what never happens is people are wrong. And a lot of times when you get into conversations, it becomes very divisive, right? Mm. This guy, that, whether it's politics, Jordan or LeBron, or, you know, who's the greatest or who's the best team of this. I didn't want to be about that. I wanted to be about connecting. So, and I also feel like as a young Black man under 40, I wanted to move the wine industry in a way that was representative of myself and my business partners, and also do it our way, but respect them. Like, say, hey, you've inspired me to be special. Now let me be special in my way, but also giving them credit. So Chosen's not your regular wine brand. We work with other wine brands to tell their stories also. And we're trying to make the wine from the Willamette Valley accessible for people and to show them that, like, this is what wine, a quality of wine is supposed to taste like from the Willamette Valley, and Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and what other varietals we use.
So I guess, where can people find it? Like, we were looking to taste some of that Chosen Family Wine.
Totally. Yeah. ChosenFamilyWines.com right now. We've started conversations with distribution. But yeah, like those conversations, getting in Ohio, New York, Arizona, California, those things take time. And we have to get the inventory for that, right? We went from 125 cases to this year's 3,800. So as we grow, as we start to evolve, I want to make sure people understand our story, know it, and trust us, not only because I say things and I've done the research and, you know, I'm the owner and we're working with a great team, but because I value other people's dollars, especially in this space, a high-end good, but I want you to have an aha moment. I want you to enjoy that bottle of wine while watching the new season of Yellowstone or your favorite basketball team or a special meal with your girl. I want you to trust me that as much time as I put in basketball, I'm willing to put into this business. Mm.
And last question before we let you go. Podcast and TV, now wine. I guess what's next for Channing Frye?
You know what? Really just trying to do the best I can with those things. Finding a balance is where I'm really kind of meditating right now. All my kids, I have four kids, but three of them are playing basketball. So I don't want to get burnt out on basketball or wine, that I don't have enough emotional energy for my family. That's not why I retired. But for me, it's constantly finding that balance of like injecting energy and emotion into in time in the things that I love the most. And also just looking for other investments. I always get every day ask my agent to send me stuff, maybe different investments that I've looked at, or I always talk to him about what am I using? What do I think I could help at or promote or be an investor about or a founder? So we're just constantly looking for things, man. And it's been fun. And some things I've invested in over time have been pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, a very busy man, Channing Frye. We thank you for making some time and stopping by the lounge.
No problem, man. I was already at work, so here we go.
Even better. Yeah. You got an open seat anytime. Thank you again,
Channing. Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for stopping by the Legends Lounge, brought to you by the National Basketball Retired Players Association. Give us a follow on Twitter at NBA Legends Lounge, and be sure to subscribe and rate the Legends Lounge on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll catch you next time.